Right, this week on Wellness Wednesday, we observe Scoliosis Awareness Month. We're shining a spotlight on spinal health and overall well-being. Scoliosis, a condition characterised by a sideways curvature of the spine, affects millions worldwide. While it's a journey many navigate, focused on wellness can significantly improve quality of life, manage symptoms and promote long-term health for those with scoliosis. Siobhan Mungovan is author and advocate for spina bifida and renal failure and joins me on the programme now. Good morning to you, Siobhan.
Good morning and thank you so much for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. Thank you for being with us. So you have scoliosis, front and back, and spina bifida. So what is the impact on you and how does it affect you?
So I have kyphoscoliosis, which is scoliosis from the front and the back. So my spine is in the shape of a backward S. And I guess spina bifida and scoliosis affects people in many, many different ways. But how it affects me is my lung capacity. I'm working on about 10% lung capacity on a day-to-day basis. And just to give you a kind of a visual picture as to what that actually looks like and feels like, for me, it's like breathing through a straw. And any given time, that's the amount of oxygen that I'm able to get into my body. So it's challenging at the best of times, but we make the best of what we have.
Yeah, indeed. In terms of scoliosis, a lot of the conversation, and I'm not saying it's not right, but a lot of the conversation is on young people about operations, about waiting lists, about how we get these people into operating theatres and get the right treatment for them at the right time. And that is very, very important as well. But presumably there's a whole cohort of people with scoliosis like yourself. Did you ever have the option for an operation? Was that ever on the cards for you? Or perhaps maybe you did have an operation?
You are correct in saying that early detection is key with somebody with scoliosis. And that comes with early age. For me, I supposed they use the method wait and see method, and unfortunately that's not really the method that I firmly agree with, and it has kind of made me to where I am today. So we did the wait and see method, and it was basically to wait until I stopped growing, and that was age 19 or 18, and then we did the assessment to see was I eligible for the surgery. But then it came too late because my spinal cord was wrapped around my spine. So the risk was far too high for me to take in order to straighten my spine. For me personally, surgery was never going to be an option.
But then in terms of, you know, you're an advocate for spina bifida and other, I'm just curious, is with so much focus rightly on the conversation we have about scoliosis, are we missing out in supports for you or others with scoliosis that have not had operations but are sort of continuing life? I'm just wondering, is it difficult sometimes to get your voice heard in this area?
First of all, I empathise completely with the young adults and the kids that are on those waiting lists and their parents. I'm always an advocate for the carers of Ireland because I do think they're the forgotten people and they're looking on us suffering. But I suppose I want to give a little bit of open light to those people who have scoliosis, that I have kyphoscoliosis, which is quite severe scoliosis. Mm-hmm. And I'm living my life as best I possibly can. And I've got such an appreciation for what I have in life. And it's not to say, come on here and say that it's been easy, because it has not. It's been one hell of a journey. But I think my resilience and my strength and the support network around me has pulled me through those dark times. And I want to, as I said, shed a bit of light and hope to the parents and the young people who are living with scoliosis, and maybe surgery may not be an option.
Mm-hmm. You had that around you, that support that got you through the dark times. Are we organised on a national level that, you know, families of children with or young adults with scoliosis, or indeed they themselves with scoliosis, do we have enough sort of support to help people through the dark times like you were able to avail of?
I think the element of being heard is powerful. And I do believe sometimes people are not being heard. And those are the resources, I think, that do need a little bit of improvement in relation to, like, I'm in talk therapy since day dot, and I'm a huge advocate for talk therapy. But sometimes I believe maybe talk therapy is not readily available to people in order to be able to speak and to be heard with something that you're living with, like scoliosis or spina bifida or whatever it may be. So those resources are there, but sometimes maybe are too expensive. Mm. Sometimes they're not really available in your locality if you're living in rural Ireland. So there is room for improvement, but we are progressing more than we did back when I was young.
Yeah, which is positive. And I do appreciate the sort of recognising the gaps, but also it is important to talk of the positives as well. You mentioned some of the impact spina bifida has had on you. You know, I think most people with spina bifida, their experience might be different to the next person's. It's that type of a condition, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's something that I really want to get across, because it's considered the snowflake condition. And what I mean by that, if there was 10 people lined up in a row right in front of you now, we'd all have different experiences, different symptoms, different side effects of what spina bifida is, or indeed scoliosis. Just because scoliosis affects me, my lung capacity, a lot of people would say that they have chronic pain with it. I'm extremely fortunate to say that I don't have chronic pain with it, but then I have the lung capacity issue. So if each individual's experience is unique to them.
Yeah, okay. And what can we learn then? What is it? Why is it important that we understand that everyone's difference, everyone's experience with spina bifida is different?
I think it's important because we all have different maps of the world. And like, I think we can't really put our vision of the world into somebody else's. And that goes with either having a disability or being an able-bodied person. I can't tell how you live your life. Mm. I don't know what you've been through. You don't know what I've been through, really. And it just comes with having that place of empathy and being able to hold space for whatever that person is willing to share. And like going back to what you said earlier, the resources within Ireland, just to be able to hold space for somebody, for them to be able to share and be open. Because I do believe sometimes when you have a condition like spina bifida or scoliosis, that we do, we're very kind of scared of showing our vulnerable side. Mm. And for years, I was very scared showing my vulnerable side. And to this day, it's still a little bit of a struggle, because we don't want people to see the not so nice side to us, but like we're an all round human being, the good, the bad, and sometimes the quirky, as I say.
Yeah, exactly, which is kind of all of us, isn't it? And you know, people will be listening, even just the 10% lung capacity. If you understand where I'm coming from, but you know that and everything else that you've gone through in your life. You're 38 now, and you remain so positive, and you know you also so quick to want to talk about, you know, that life is worth living, and there's so many positives in that. But people will go, I couldn't be like Siobhan. So what is there anything we could take, I suppose, generally speaking, either others who have the same conditions as you, or those who, you know, maybe just go around feeling sorry for themselves for no great reason? And I don't mean to be critical, I've done that myself, right? But you know, how do you retain your positivity? Is it just living your life and the positivities are there?
And I think it's unrealistic to say that I live in a positive bubble, because there is out in the public domain, very much so in recent times, about this toxic positivity. I'm very much a realist in life. I acknowledge the not so good, but I don't unpack there. And I think that's very important. You mentioned earlier, people can't say, well, I can't be like you, Siobhan. Well, why not? Why not? Like, it's about your mindset. Mm-hmm. And it's about a can-do attitude. Mm. There is a heap of things I can't do. And if I was to name them here, we'd be here until tomorrow. Mm. There's a load of things I can't do, but I've chosen to talk about the stuff that I can do. Mm. And it's a habit. It's a habit-forming thing. It's not something that I just woke up tomorrow morning or yesterday morning and just said, you know what, now I'm going to see the positive side to life. It's something that I built up over a period of time, And that is using the resources I have, which is my support network. If I can avail of coaching, if I can avail of talk therapy, if I surrounding myself with positive people that want to see me thrive in life and want to celebrate me, instead of focusing on, well, Siobhan, you're only 4 foot, like, I mean, like, I'm around people that celebrate me and triumph in me instead of put me down.
Yeah, because we so often define people, don't we, by, you know, how they look, you know, an illness they might have or whatever. But, you know, and then that that stops us seeing the person.
Absolutely. And I think, and I can only speak from a woman's perspective, I do think in today's society, there is so much pressure on women, especially in the Instagrammable world. We've all to be perfect. We've all to have the perfect shaped bodies. And I'm kind of out there with like a disfigurement per se. And I know people don't like the word disfigurement because, oh, they're like, they shy away from it. But I stand in my power. I have a disfigurement, but that's not who I am as an individual. On the inside is more important. So I want people to kind of, I'm an Instagram girl. I'm on Instagram. Of course I am. But I want people to see inside of somebody, not just their outer shell.
You know, you made a very, a toxic positivity. It's not something I've really dug too deep into because I'm always in negative areas of social media. No, but you know, and this sort of, this fallacy really that you know of beauty, because even the most beautiful people probably take the picture, look at it and go, oh my God, I look terrible, my belly sticks out, my bum isn't big enough, or whatever it might be. I'm kind of glad that I'm of an age now whereas I don't feel the pressure from that. My word, if you were like, if I was 25 now, as the actual 25 year old I was, it would be tough. I mean, I'd hope I'd cope, Siobhan, but my word, it would be tough.
And that is very true. Like, because growing up when I grew up, it wasn't a thing. Like, the internet wasn't a thing, and it wasn't like posting the perfect photo. And I do think nowadays it's so hard to grow up. And this is why it's so much more important to have people like myself, I'll speak for myself, out there in the public domain who is full of imperfections, but is proud of their imperfections and wants to shine light on those imperfections instead of hiding and shying away. Well,
there's an honesty there, because we all have our imperfections. And, you know, my word, if everyone's life was like what they posted on social media, everyone would be just living the absolute dream. We just put out the best of us, don't we? And sometimes I think that can actually amplify what you're struggling with yourself, be it something mental, something physical, a relationship. You know, I think you put it, when you try and conform to this what is perfect, there's nothing perfect. And what makes us special, I think, is our imperfections.
I think that comes with maturity as well. Like, I'm 38 now, so I don't look at Instagram and be like, oh my goodness, I wish my life was like theirs.
That's why I'm so glad I'm the age I am, because I'm the same. Sorry, continue there, Siobhan.
Yeah, so I kind of look at it more from a perspective, oh my goodness, kind of like there must be something going on in that person's life that, like, it's not realistic to everything go right in your life all day, every day. That's not realistic. Yeah. As I said, everyone has ups and downs.
But me and you, I think, are going to be the same here. We'll still take 4 or 5 pictures before we post the selfie on Instagram, right? We'll admit to that, yeah?
Absolutely. I am a queen. I'm a queen of a selfie. Don't ever get it wrong. I'm queen of a selfie. And we all want to look our best. Of course, at the end of the day, nobody wants to go around wearing a bin bag. We all want to accentuate our nice parts.
All right. Can people find out more about the work that you've done, what you've written, and your advocacy work, Siobhan? I'm sure many listening would be interested to learn a bit more about you. Is there a go-to spot? You said you're on Instagram, for an example.
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, and my handle is Siobhan Mungovan Official, and I have a website, so that's www.keepsmilingalways.ie.
What a wonderful message. It is a message. And what I'm not just saying that sort of a platitude. I'm trying my hardest in life to sort of, you know, live that way as well too. So I'm not just saying that because it's you. Siobhan, thanks for your time. Great to chat to you. Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Siobhan Mungovan there. Mungovan, author and advocate for spina bifida and renal failure. And she also has front and back scoliosis as well. And a wonderful person. Right, what else have we got coming up on the show? Well, we do have Chris Ashmore coming in with business news. And we'll preview the Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast. I've got a pile of comments here to get through. I'm so appreciative. And I think we do well in getting your comment read out. Sometimes it might take a day or two because the show's so blooming busy. They're not screened for how, you know, they're not screened, go, oh, I'll use that one, I don't use that one. I get through pretty much all of them, okay? But we are just, we're so lucky here on the show to have a really, really busy show. So much interaction with you, our wonderful family out there. Right, let me take a break and I'll come back with whatever Caroline tells me to after these. Dean Kenny is Northwest Regional Organiser for Young Fine Gael and Director of Agriculture and Rural Affairs and joins us now. Dean, how are you?
Hi, Greg. How are you? Thanks so much for having me on.
No, it's good to have you on the show. Right. The Young Fine Gael branch of the party is concerned about the cost of living in Ireland. It's just so blummin' expensive compared to other EU countries. What are your more detailed concerns there?
Yeah, absolutely. So this comes off the back of a recent report from Eurostat, which kind of confirmed what a lot of people would already think about everyday life, is that Ireland is now the second most expensive country in the EU behind only Denmark. And more specifically, it's the most expensive for alcohol and tobacco in Europe. So we really are making a call to government this week and to the senior party to act on this and to improve things, to do a number of things which we can get into in a little while. But really, I think it's having a real impact on young people in terms of going out and socialising, having a few pints, going out for a meal during the week or at the weekend. Anyone will tell you, to be honest, the dogs in the street will tell you that it's become prohibitively far too expensive to go out at the same level that you might have maybe 5 or 10 years ago. As I said, we have really high costs in Europe. For example, the cost of a pint in Ireland is more than double the EU average. Is that 205% of the EU average? And a real problem there is around one third of that is going directly to the state in taxes.
But in this day and age, though, no government's going to start cutting tax on carcinogenic product like alcohol, are they? If, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoy a pint. I'd love to see it down €3 a pint. I'd just say in this day and age, you know, we're not going to see a reduction in the tax takes on the likes of booze. They're already losing out on the tax take from cigarettes as people move away from smoking legal cigarettes at the very least.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, and that's not what this is about. We completely recognise the real dangers of alcohol, that it's not a normal product. It shouldn't be marketed as a normal product. But also, it has been increased in recent years. I mean, that 9% VAT rate is something that the hospitality sector and pubs and businesses right across the country have been calling for to return to in budget 2025. It wasn't done. It was committed to. It was looked at. We're calling for them to do it this year, for it to be looked at properly. And, like, I mean, you look at pubs and small businesses right across the country. For example, I'm from Mayo. I was just looking at some stats recently. Across Mayo, the recent statistics I could find, since 2005, 135 pubs have closed. Across Donegal, it's 122. On average, 150 pubs are closing every year. I mean, these are the hearts of communities, of rural villages like the one that I'm from. So it's about more than alcohol. And obviously, we know it causes dangers and it causes risks to people's health. But this is about communities, about businesses, about getting out and socialising.
If certain elements of the hospitality industry have been their own worst enemies, you know, the gouging in the likes of Dublin, etc., you know, cancelling people's booked rooms ahead of a concert and then reselling them for triple the money, you know, and then now they're talking about a hospitality tax in Dublin. And I just wonder if we in the West and more, you know, even our businesses, even like the 9% VAT rate, right? You know, how could you give that to businesses that were screwing people over? That wasn't happening in Mayo, not happening in Donegal. But I just wonder if the, you know, parts of the industry are the biggest enemies of some of the industry in this country.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to disagree with any of the points you made there, Greg. But I mean, the reduction back to a 9% VAT rate would create a more level playing field, certainly for those in the West and those in rural areas that are really feeling the pinch. In another aspect of what we're calling for, we have consistently called for minimum unit pricing to not happen. We're calling for it to be reversed. Minimum unit pricing is has been described by the chief economist with the Institute of International and European Affairs as one of the dumbest policies he can ever remember, because it simply increases profits for retailers. It doesn't raise anything for the state. So on that basis, we're opposing that. Like, that is impacting.
Can I factor in a border county into that as well? Because you look at the businesses in Donegal trying to compete when other businesses very close to them do not have to adhere to this.
Yeah, I'm not going to try and comment on that because I can't. I'm from Mayo.
I'm not expecting you to. Sorry, Dean. I'm just saying layer. It only adds to your point. I'm not asking you to address that specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can tell you right across, even Mayo is a fair distance from the border, but that definitely happens. It's driving people to other measures. And I mean, like, the point is people are going to drink regardless. People are going to try and socialise. Our alcohol consumption has come down in recent years, and possibly minimum unit pricing has had a lot to do with it. Maybe it hasn't. I know people are really more into fitness lately and other hobbies, so maybe that can be more attributable to it. Aside from the minimum unit pricing, another thing we're calling for, which is only going to aid in revitalising our nighttime economy, is something we've called for consistently over the last 10 years, even longer, and also the government has committed to doing, is revitalising and improving our, what I would call, archaic licensing laws. At the moment, I mean, Ireland, we still have that 3 a.m. closing time for pubs and nightclubs. Whenever we talk about extending it, a lot of people kind of react lose their own of themselves, I might say, and think that, you know, it's ridiculous and it's too late. But it's to give that option for pubs and businesses. Right. You go across on your holidays to Spain and Portugal and you see that these pubs and businesses have that option, and it would really increase and improve our economy and make Ireland more attractive to young people.
Didn't know young Fine Gael was such party animals.
You'd be surprised, Craig. I mean, we're not all just policy swats or anything that.
No,
we're
trying
to listen to our peers as well.
Yeah. Hey, listen, it's important. Your voice is heard, and where you want to be, where we're at, and maybe the where we end up is somewhere in the middle. Who's to say? Listen, thanks for sharing your views with us. Take care of yourself. That's Dean Kenny, Northwest Regional Organiser for Young Fine Gael. Good morning to you, Chris. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg.
Did you enjoy the rally?
I did enjoy the rally. Everything, I think it was right up there. One of the best. Yeah, yeah. A lot of the logistical side of things worked out very, very well. And yeah, great rally, great event.
All right. And like all of us, we wear multiple hats in this industry, don't we, Chris? And we're going to talk a bit of business now. And talk to me about the latest Onpost e-commerce index. What's it look at? What's it telling us?
Yeah, now this is basically looking at how much people are selling online. And of course, we've all noticed the rise in parcels and deliveries. And they've been looking at I suppose you could call it sustainable shopping habits. We hear about the circular economy. People are selling things on, and there's quite a shift in what's going on here. Generally, it tends to be younger people, but they've done a survey and finding out that there's an increase in the number of people who are selling on goods, including the likes of pre-loved toys. One in three people between 35 and 44 has used a parcel service to sell on a pre-loved toy in the last 6 months.
Are we using eBay as much? Because I noticed they cut their seller fees, and that normally indicates they're struggling a bit. I presume there are
more
other
competition. Yeah,
there
exactly.
There are other apps that are available now to do that. Yeah.
So this is it. There's so many things, and you go on television, and there's a new thing. Is it Vint? And there's various things.
Facebook Marketplace is massive as well,
yeah,
too.
Huge.
I know that probably is not captured in these surveys, but a lot of people just either giving away or selling on reasonably cheap stuff on that platform. So that's all part of what we're talking about, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, the top pre-loved items that have been sold in the past 12 months, clothing 47%, furniture 31%, household items, well, that's a fairly vague term, 30%, electronics 19%, children's toys, and then with things, you know, everything from books, old GAA programs, everything. Again, a lot of those would have been on eBay, but now changing habits, trends.
eBay, I was scammed, attempted to scam a couple of times, and no shade in eBay. They probably do great stuff. It had put me off. It put me off only for the sort of the protections of PayPal. I would have been out significantly. Yeah. You know, that would be a concern of mine. That being said, Facebook Market, I've bought stuff off that, not been so successful in selling, but still, I can see exactly why people are more open to it now. Right, council have money up for grabs, do they?
Yes, now the council were involved in setting up the Northwest Energy Agency, and in order to encourage people to look at retrofitting their home or availing of solar grants, they are now offering a 250 euro discount for the cost of your, it's called a BER, it's a, an assessment. You have to get somebody out to look at your home to see how energy efficient it is. They take measurements, and you need to have this when you are applying for certain grants from the Sustainable Energy Ireland body.
I did the installation on mine, although some people said I shouldn't, but I did, and it didn't change my energy rating at all, which is quite depressing.
Oh, poor you. So they basically, the way this works is the council have set up a system. You can, there's a QR code there, you can contact the council, and it's under the Northwest Energy Agency, and there's this discount for the BER, and also it'll help you look at what options are available there for
you. So you find out where you're at and where potentially you could go.
And there, I know my own Facebook feed, excuse me, there seems to be so many companies involved in the whole solar panel sector at the moment. And, you know, a lot of local jobs, it's a growing area. And certainly, look, if no harm in having a look at this, because particularly if your house is an older house, some of the older houses are not that energy efficient.
Indeed. And energy efficient grants for business too, because many of the businesses aren't as efficient as they potentially could be.
Yes, there is a grant. The maximum amount is 10,000 euro. This is, if you go through localenterprise.ie, you'll find out more information about this. It's a green grant there. Again, it helps out with your audit, and it can open the doorways to many other grants as well. So look, if you're in business, certainly worth checking out. It's called the Energy Efficiency Grant. And essentially it's to encourage people to make their businesses greener and energy efficient, which means consuming less power.
And there's some info for those who wish to start their own business coming up, Chris.
Yes, a one-day boot camp taking place on Friday, the 4th of July. And it's a start your own business one-day boot camp. It costs 50 euro, but it gives you a great snapshot of the sort of information that you need if you are interested in starting your own business. And again, just contact your local enterprise office on that one.
Right, let's get on to the podcast, which is available for you today to download or stream off our website in the listen back on demand section, effectively. But it'll also be broadcast at the weekend. We'll tell you more about that. Two guests this week. You flagged City of Derry Airport last week, and you have a very pertinent guest to that topic on the show this.
Yes, following up from last week, there were figures out showing an increase in the traffic passenger numbers through City of Derry Airport. So I've been speaking with Steve Fraser, who is the Managing Director of City of Derry Airport, and numerous topics we went through, including the fact it's still around 40% of those using the airport are either going to or coming from Donegal. So that's very significant. There's a further commitment to the Derry to London Heathrow service, which is a subsidised service guaranteed for a number of years ahead. And also we spoke about plans to have a new City of Derry to Dublin service by October of next year, and we can hear more about that in this clip.
The government's target is no later than October 26. Of course, from an airport point of view, we'd like to accelerate that as best we can. I think we have to respect the different hoops that they may have to jump through, and the regulations they'll have to make sure they comply with EU regulations on things like state aid. It's an odd PSO because technically City of Derry sits outside the EU, so they just need to get those permissions. They'll need to write a procurement process. We'll have to give the winning bidder time to be able to get aircraft and resources and people into position. But yeah, very confident, as you say, the second half of 26 will definitely be delivering a Derry to Dublin route.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting development, Chris.
Absolutely. Now, the service was there before. It only had about 12,000 passengers the years that it operated. It did struggle a bit. but he's hopeful they could add up to 80,000 passengers every year, and it certainly would be great for access to the Northwest, be it leisure, business. It would certainly be a huge boost to the region.
Definitely. Yeah. Right, your second guest this week.
Yes, I've been speaking with Letterkenny woman Sally Murphy, who is the new president of the Donegal Women in Business Network. Now, she is a communications consultant, and actually in this clip, which I thought was well worth pulling out, she speaks about how she was attending a wedding here in Donegal. She made a speech at the wedding that impressed one of the guests so much that it led to the opening up of all sorts of doors for her own business.
I had a really lucky break in, I think, around, must have been 2018. It was around the same time as I moved from Earthly Communications to Well Told. And there's a great story. I was at a wedding in the Shandon Hotel, and the bride asked me at the last minute to make a speech on her behalf. And I did, and I stood up and I made a speech. I wasn't a bridesmaid, but I was an old friend, and I made a speech and celebrated her. And when I sat back down at the table, a woman who was sitting beside me leaned across and she said, "Did you really not have time to prepare that speech?" And I said, "No, I didn't." And she said, "God, I could really do with someone with your communication skills on my team." But it turned out she was the head of customer experience for Google, EMEA. So 2 weeks later, I found myself in London working with her team, and that opened doors for me in a way that nothing else could have. So that was a sliding doors moment in my career. And from there, it gave me a level of, I suppose, credibility and connection. And I've worked with the United Nations, Johnson & Johnson, Thermo Fisher Scientific, the National Museum of Ireland, like really, really impressive organisations, and I really credit it to that moment in the Shandon Hotel in Donegal.
Well, that's great for Sally, Chris, but when is someone going to listen to me speak and go, what?
You never know, there could be somebody today.
I don't do this scripted, by the way, just in case. I have no scripts. You know, 99% of this is done off the top.
No, Caroline's just taking a call now.
But, you know, I'll tell you what it's about. It's you have to, you know, when opportunities do present them, you have to take them and then maximise them. And I think that's exactly what she's done. And, you know, obviously someone, there's credit to the person who spotted the talent that was there.
Indeed.
Because that's critical too. You need good people in the right positions to say, there's a talented person. Brilliant. Lots more from both guests, Sally and Steve, on the podcast, which is available for you right now, Chris, and then broadcast on Sunday, of course.
That's right, on Sunday after the 6 o'clock news. And if you want to contact the programme, the best way is by email. So it's businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Thanks so much, Chris. We'll see you next week. Do appreciate your time. It's great to get a bit of news as well as flagging the pod. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Mary Minahan is chair of the judging panel and the Irish Times features editor and joins me on the programme now. Good morning to you. How are you keeping?
I'm good, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, you have the tough task of finding Ireland's greenest places 2025. It's a nationwide initiative by the Irish Times and Electric Ireland. And, you know, we've got no end of places up here, but you want to hear about them, I presume, Mary?
We do indeed, Greg. And, you know, yes, it's going to be a tough task, but also an enjoyable one. And I think with so much bad news going on in the world, I'm delighted that you've asked me on to talk about this, Greg. So thank you very much. So as you say, the Ireland's Greenest Places competition 2025 has been run by the Irish Times in association with Electric Ireland. And we're just asking people to nominate their local places, their local projects. Don't be worrying that they might be too small. Just submit. And if you're not in, you can't win. And just places that people think deserve to be acknowledged and to be praised. So it's you know, it's a nationwide competition, and I should say it's an all-island competition. Yes, we'd love to hear entries from Donegal, also from my native Derry there. We'd love to hear people from there as well. And we have a big pile of entries here already. I've just been filtering through them. I see Ross Noyla Farmers Market have got in early with their entry, so very much appreciate that. So, as I say, What we're going to do is people can go online to make it easy as possible. I think people should just go to Google and type in Ireland's greenest places. It should take you to an article on the Irish Times website. And then there's a very simple online form and we'll choose. We have different categories. We have Ireland's greenest suburb, Ireland's greenest village, Ireland's greenest town, Ireland's greenest community. And then out of that, we'll pick an overall winner.
So what are the criteria you're looking for then? Because, I mean, is there a crossover with tidy towns, for an example, because they might be full of trees and plants and all that type of stuff? Or is it to do with sort of environmental issues? I know you won't want to be too prescriptive because you don't want to discourage anyone either. But no, just give us more of a sense of the, you know, the types of... Exactly, yeah. Please, Mary. Yeah.
Surely, yeah. So I think if you look right across Ireland now, there is a really growing and welcome trend for sustainability in action. You know, say, for example, just to give you an example, you have lots of beautiful beaches in Donegal. There are great groups of people, kids and so on, going out and doing beach cleans that they might think about entering. You know, so it can range right across from all sorts of things, Greg. And you mentioned the tidy towns, and I'd say there probably would be a bit of overlap, certainly in terms of the people who are involved, because they're the people who care about their environment, aren't they? So it's only natural they would probably be involved in tidy towns. And also,
so if I had a project, say for instance, where I was trying to sort of, you know, maintain and encourage the bee population, for an example.
Perfect example.
Okay, good exactly, stuff. I'm on board now. Well, I don't have bees,
Good for you. It could be, you know, bog and habitat restoration. It could be rewilding. You see a lot of rewilding around and about now, don't you? It could be people who are planting native trees and, it doesn't need to be a huge commercial project. It can be very, very small scale. Like, no project is too small to enter this. So a lot of people are doing things like helping to restore dunes. That would be another thing you might see around Donegal, because obviously there is evidence, unfortunately, of coastal erosion. You might see farmers working together to enhance river catchment areas, and just people who are, you know, making an effort to record and keep hold of Ireland's really remarkable biodiversity. So, you know, we're not looking to sort of, you know, greenwash things. We're looking for like pretty small scale, medium sized projects that people around the country just think deserve a wee bit of recognition. So we've kept it very broad with our title. We're talking about Ireland's greenest places. So as I say, it can be a suburb, a village, a town, a community, any kind of project at all. So we've kept it really, you know, deliberately broad. And just in terms of criteria, as you've asked. So we're looking at, you know, a beneficial environmental impact. That's a key thing. And then we'd want to see evidence that there's ongoing engagement with communities. And, you know, then if we can see evidence that people's behaviours have changed, that would, you know, so I would ask people to keep all that in mind when they're making their nominations. And that would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and time and resources going into this too. It's not just a Dublin-based desktop exercise. You know, you're taking your time and visiting the front runners and put a lot of effort into choosing the categories. So in fairness, this is, you know, as I say, time and resources going into this.
Ah, yes. I mean, it's a project we're really looking forward to over the summer. And I can tell you a wee bit about my other judges. I have Eamon Ryan on board, who you will remember as the former Minister for the Environment and the ex-leader of the Green Party. So, you know, he's a man who knows a thing or two about the environment, and also the Irish Times environment editor, Kevin O'Sullivan, who's steeped in all this kind of thing. Rosita Boland, our features writer, who's been a senior features writer, and Rosita has been a kind of veteran of these competitions we've run over the years, Best Shops, Best Place to Holiday and so on. So she's very experienced, and we have a representative from Electric Ireland and myself. I'm on the panel as well. So yes, it's definitely not a Dublin-based exercise. We're delighted so far that we've got, you know, we've got entries coming in from all over the country. And I'm here today to say I'd really encourage, you know, from Donegal and from the neighbouring counties, just to, I know people are doing great, great work. It often goes unacknowledged. It's such, you know, it's such an important issue of our time. And we'd really love people to just go online, fill out a very, very simple form. All you need to tell us is, you know, the name of the greenest place. just submit about 300 words about why you think it should win, and maybe get the kids to help you. That's what I would often do in a thing like this. And then we'd be looking for the type of place. It's a simple drop-down menu. You can select from Greenest Village, Greenest Suburb, Greenest Community, Greenest Town, as I said, those categories. Then just tell us your county, your name, your email and your phone number, just for verification purposes. That's all we need.
And there's a lot of... Greg, I should say, yes, Mary, go ahead. You should say what, sorry?
I was just going to say there's an opportunity if you want to. You can bolster your application, if you like, by putting in a photo or a video, perhaps, of what you do. But really the key thing is just your short and sweet 300 words. Here's why you think your project should be nominated for Ireland's Greenest Place.
For sure. And I think you're right, Mary, to recognise these people, because there's an awful lot of people talk about it. A lot of people talk about what we should be doing. A lot of people talk about there's no point in doing that. But the people we don't often hear from are the middle in between all of that, that are busying, getting on with it in their own communities, their own towns. And they just, they don't hear the noise. They just get on for the benefit of the their area. And they're factoring in, you know, the climate and nature. Mary, listen, thank you so very much for all of your time. Have have a lovely day. Take care. That's Mary Minahan there, chair of the judging panel and Irish Times features editor. So just Google Ireland's Greenest Places 2025. Read more up about it. Hopefully I've given you enough information to spark an interest if you think it suits you. But if you want more info, Google, as I've just mentioned, and you'll find out all the deets there. Caller says, why do a lot of cyclists not use the cycle lanes that are provided in the town? Well, you're not going to win the Tour de France on a cycle lane, are you? No, I'm only joking. I don't know, to be honest with you. Maybe they're not maintained well enough. Donna Marie Doherty, by the way, is coming up around the Northwest after 12 in case I forget to mention it and get a slap. A caller says, I fully agree with parents, Rhys St. Bernadette's. There's no way mainstream schools can match the type of care and outcome that's achieved in St. Bernadette's. Simple as that. Some of the responses there are a little bit longer, and I want to give them time. Morning, Greg. Thinking about the disaster of the A5 debacle, this happened because you have environmental extremists making and implementing crazy laws. As the saying goes, you reap what you sow. Yeah, there is that, but also there's the interpretation of those laws by planners. And then there is, if that interpretation isn't correct, there's the possibility to sort of exploit that to your own gains, to the objectors. So I've no doubt the environmental issue is part of this, but A, it wasn't factored in or implemented by the planners, and B, it was able to then to be exploited by those that simply don't want this road to go away. I'd find it hard to sleep at night, personally, if I were objecting to this. Greg, I love Siobhan's attitude. God bless her. I myself live with an attitude of gratitude every day. Life is precious. It is, Mary. And the older we get, the more precious we generally speaking, I think, understand it is. Siobhan's positivity to life is very uplifting. Thank you, Siobhan, says another. In China, their students are sent to many countries for further education, but they must return and serve 6 years in their own country. It should be the same here. And of course, getting a permit to work there is not easy, though they are relaxing some of those laws, it has to be said. Right, that's where we leave it on the show today. Thanks to Caroline Orr, as always, who researched and produced the programme, assisted by Shannon Wilkins. Have a fantastic Wednesday. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9.